Well, if you're listening to Smooth Traffic in a sequential fashion, you'll find this is number 54. But if this is your first time listening to the podcast, it will be episode 1. Numbers are very, very confusing things. Probably best we don't go there. I probably should mention that, as always, the podcast is presented by me, Johnny Edge, Ben Pierce, who is in... There he is.
Ben Lazarus Pierce.
And, names are very confusing. And and Pat Gilbert, who just piped up there to correct the
Hello.
Name. So, welcome to Smooth Traffic. We are going to talk about, in this episode, we've got some 30-second car reviews because, God, I'm on form with them at the moment. We're also going to be talking about some technology and crisps.
Pat Gilbert.
Yeah, it's quite a good name, that.
It's not bad.
He looks like a Pat and a Gilbert.
Kingy, can we change your name by default?
Pat Gilbert.
No.
He looks like a Pat Gilbert, though, doesn't he?
And you look like a...
Oh, boo.
So, Johnny, you've driven more cars in the last, I don't know how many weeks since we last recorded.
Yeah.
It's probably months, knowing how efficient we are.
Yep.
And we've had fantastic feedback about our 30-second reviews. Or rather, yours 30-second reviews.
Have we?
Yep.
Well, we haven't had any negative feedback, so we're presuming that therefore we should just stick with it as a as a concept. Format, if you will.
That's some solid feedback.
Exactly. Ben, do you have the stopwatch?
I have a stopwatch ready. I am very good at stopwatching.
Marvellous. So,
are you ready, Johnny?
I am ready.
Okay. Your first vehicle is the Mercedes-Benz Sprinter.
3, 2, 1, go.
Well, the Mercedes-Benz Sprinter is probably the most technologically advanced light commercial vehicle you can buy. It uses Mercedes-Benz UX, the sort of new fancy user interface thing that you get on Mercedes passenger vehicles. You can say, "Hey Mercedes," and ask it a question like you can to Amazon's lady or Microsoft's lady, and it's very, very comfortable, and it still has all the same dimensions, I should say, as before, so you can load up all the same amount of stuff, basically, and there's over 1,700 versions.
Stop.
Why would you stop there? There are 1,700 versions. I want to know about this.
He wants to hear about every single one.
I could do 1,700 Mercedes Sprinter reviews.
Yeah, imagine that. I just got so into the whole thing, the review, that I forgot that there was a time limit on it.
But that's the way the world is now, King. Nobody wants detailed reviews. They just want something they can just pick up and put back down straight away again. Detail's not important anymore. It's fine.
Okay, second car.
The Mercedes-Benz X-Class pickup.
3, 2, 1, go.
I don't like pickup trucks, but this one is probably the best of the bunch. That being said, my particular pickup test model was about £47,000, so it's very, very expensive. It's a Nissan Navara that's been enhanced by Mercedes, posh interior, lots and lots of Mercedes touches, the usual Mercedes touchscreen and stuff. Still drives like a pickup, still big, still heavy, still practical, still good off-road, and just a very, very expensive pickup. Still don't like it, though.
Well, 5 seconds to spare. Informative as ever. That was supposed to be a compliment, but it didn't sound like it, I suppose.
Yeah, thanks, Ben.
Okay, do we have another car?
We do. Car number 3, the Mazda 6.
3, 2, 1, go.
Mazda are getting dangerously close to producing cars that can rival the likes of Mercedes, BMW, Audi and Jaguar. This is a very, very good saloon. And if you're not at all bothered about rear-wheel drive, which you shouldn't be anyway, this is something you should seriously consider. Excellent diesel engine, beautiful interior, very quiet, very comfortable, and very, very handsome as well. Great car. Nice one, Mazda.
Still got 5 seconds.
I should do 25-second reviews.
Well, no, because you can clearly do that, so we should do 20 seconds to make it a challenge for you.
I don't like challenges. I like things to just come easy.
On to the next car. The BMW 5 Series.
Go.
The BMW 5 Series is one of those cars you can get in blindfolded and know exactly what you're in, even the new one. The way it feels, the way it drives, everything about it is basically the same as the last 5 Series, just enhanced. It feels exactly like a BMW does, basically. And that's not a bad thing at all, because it's one of the best driving sort of mid-sized executive saloons you can get your hands on. So very, very highly recommended once again. New features I'm not so sure about. It's just an enhanced version of the last car. So, yeah, highly recommended.
Oh, he's overrun! Ooh,
slightly.
I'm going to have to cut you at highly there, I'm afraid.
It's highly. Interesting.
Highly.
Take away from that, BMW 5 Series is highly.
Highly. Highly. Cool. If anyone called Lee is listening to this podcast.
They've just been woken up from their slumber.
Yeah. Hello, Lee.
You've got one more car for us then, Johnny?
Don't know.
Yes. Yes, he does. Good to know you know about these things, John. Yeah. Get that brain ready. It's the Volvo XC40.
3, 2, 1, go.
So this is probably the most popular car we get asked about at Synergy, where I work. Like, super popular at the moment. It's great value. It feels quality. It looks fantastic. It's the new sort of modern face of Volvo, and it's just brilliant. Very, very safe. Beautiful. Easy to use. Quality materials. A top quality premium SUV, basically. And there's nothing bad to say about it. Nothing at all. It's just great.
Well, you had 5 seconds to say some more great stuff.
No, I like to try and stop at 24.9.
Really, nothing you don't like about the XC40?
There was nothing anyone doesn't like about it. It's not possible to find something that you won't like about the XC40. It's just very, very likeable. I mean, maybe if it was dipped in like pink paint, you wouldn't like that, but it would still look good. It like looks good in any colour combination you put with it. It's just a really, really good car, that. And if you find something you don't like about it, get down the stairs. Basically, just get down
the
stairs.
What if I had it in shocking pink and bilious green?
It would still look good.
What, contrast roof, you mean?
Would it?
Green roof.
It would still look good, yeah, it would.
No, I was thinking the car would be bilious green and the trim would be shocking pink.
I mean, it would be different, but I still think it'd look good.
If you can think of something bad about the XC40, tweet us at Smooth Traffic or at the Johnny Edge.
No, just tweet John.
He's wrong. Yeah, to be fair, we don't care.
Yeah, or alternatively, throw yourself down the stairs. Save me a problem.
We don't approve of you throwing yourselves down the stairs. If you do happen to have an accident, please don't tell people that we told you to do it. There's probably some legal case there. Mumbo jumbo, blah, blah, blah.
Be safe out there.
Yeah, that too. Well, marvellous. 5 cars this time. How many next time, John?
Probably not many, because there will be a few actually. I'm going to a Ford light commercial vehicle range day.
Ooh.
Sometime in November. Obviously, I know when it is, but I don't know when we're recording, so like, I'm not going to say when.
Yep, very wise.
Because I know what we're like. But one of the vehicles there will be a new Ford Transit plug-in hybrid.
Interesting.
And it's the prototype. So hopefully, I'll be one of the first people to drive the future of the Ford Transit, as well as the new Fiesta van, if that tickles your fancy.
What?
Yeah, new Fiesta van as well. So yeah, if that tickles your fancy,
nope.
Good for you. I mean, it's commercial vehicle, so it's not very exciting, but it's something to talk about on the podcast, isn't it? So yeah, stay tuned.
Well, if you're a regular listener of Smooth Traffic, then fair play for sticking with us for so bloody long, because some of the stuff we put out has been utter dirge.
Some.
But, shut up, Ben. We've done some solid bits now and then. One of those bits was my movie character World Cup, which spanned episodes 33, 34, and then for some reason 38, because we just took a massive break.
We forgot, and it was crap.
So,
yeah,
if you haven't listened to that because you're new to this podcast for some reason, then go back and check out those episodes because, you know, downloads and shit. But following on from that, our MySpace page has been off the hook with requests for another World Cup. Yeah, people thought that MySpace was gone. No, not in the Smooth Traffic world.
You can't lose space. Space is always there.
Exactly. John gets it. And that's the most worrying thing I'll say today. So, people want us to do a World Cup of crisps, and John has taken on this mantle to give us the lowdown on the main competitors ahead of what will no doubt be several segments of really grueling battles between various flavours of crisp.
Yeah, I think in the interests of just, you know, making the tournament different from the movie star tournament, or whatever that was. I can't even remember what it was now.
It was the one where you kept saying Gandalf all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It was you bloody Gandalfing it up.
Yeah, I think we're going to call this one the Champions League instead, because it adds a little bit more glamour, you know. Because the Champions League is pretty glamorous. And crisps are pretty major players in the snack world. So I think they deserve a headline tournament like that, you know. So, yeah, I think this is going to be the Crisp Champions League.
Shows how times are changing. The World Cup used to be the pinnacle.
Yeah, now it's the Champions League.
It's all about the Champions League.
It's all about the Champions League. So that's the big one, and that's what the Crisps deserve. So, yeah, we've got some entrants who've each qualified by winning their respective Crisp Leagues from across Europe.
And they are...
And they are, the first one is Hula Hoops. Hula Hoops, obviously available in a few flavours, ready salted, salt and vinegar.
Surely that's their kits.
The
has got
to
be their kit, is it?
Ready salted. Well, by far and away, Hula Hoops' best flavour is the beef flavour. So.
Really? No, I think that's their second kit.
No, I think...
Oh, I'd have said that would be their European kit, so they'll wear it for the Champions League. But back home... They'll just be sticking to the classics.
Extraordinary beefy flavour to the Hula Hoops. Classic crisp, that can't go wrong. The next one is Pom Bears, who I believe are from Lithuania. And they are available in a few flavours as well. I think they're available in ready salted, salt and vinegar. And I think they are available in cheese and onion. But if you find them in salt and vinegar or cheese and onion, you're probably in Lithuania. Ready salted.
Are they really Lithuanian?
Is I have
he's
no idea.
Making it up as he goes on, isn't it? Come on.
I don't know why I believed you, but I remember seeing them in Germany when I went there years ago.
Oh yeah,
and I just presumed they were German. But I mean, they might well be Lithuanian. I don't know.
I think maybe we should just roll with the fact that they are, and just start tagging Lithuanian tourism into our tweets. You never know. So yeah, Pom Bears, they're ready salted. Basically, if you find any other flavour, well done to you. Kettle Chips. They are a home entrant, kind of like the Arsenal of crisps, I suppose. A little bit of glamour about them. Not everyone's cup of tea, but there we go. I think basically lightly salted kettle chips. That's that's the flavour you go for. You can
sea
get
salt
a few
with balsamic
flavors.
Vinegar, mate.
Yeah, that is a solid flavour as well, and I think you can get salt and pepper with that as well, which is again, quite nice. So yeah, kettle chips are in there. Quavers. That is a tricky one, because when I was young, Quavers came in prawn cocktail, and they were spectacular. I'm not going to lie. Prawn cocktail Quavers were the best Quavers. But most famously, they are cheese-flavoured. So that's the one you'll probably know Quavers for most of all. The next one, obviously, a big, big name in the world of crisps. Huge name. Probably the Real Madrid of crisps. Walker's Standard. They are available in so many flavours. I can't even name them all. You can even get them in Marmite flavour and like bean flavour or something. So yeah, amazing. Just the variety there is amazing. And obviously in Europe they're known as Lay's. In other parts of the world they're known as Lay's. But Brexit means Brexit, so Walker's. The next one is Walker's Max.
Ooh, I wonder what will happen to Walker's.
Oh, they'll be alright.
Because they're owned by Pepsi, aren't they?
Oh, are they?
It's a PepsiCo. Anyway.
Oh, good knowledge.
Let's stick with the crisps.
Walker's Max and the newly introduced Walker's Max Strong, which is a particularly, exciting new version of Walker's Max, but they are...
Are they the ones for beer?
They are the ones for beer, yeah. Mm. So they're advertised as, like, good crisp for beer. They are available now. And, just incredibly interesting crisp that I think Walker's Max have kind of been sort of underrated over the years. Never really reached the heights you thought they would. But guess what? They're in the Champions League now, so... Anything can happen at this stage of the competition. The next one is Pringles, Belgium's entrance. Very, very famous. They have got Poirot on their kit. And unusually, they line up in a tube, which is a bit strange. Again, they come in a variety of flavours, but once you get to a certain flavour, all of those flavours are the same. Very strange crisp. So, yeah, your paprika flavour.
I'm expecting big things from Pringles.
Pringles.
I've heard that once... You pop, you just can't stop.
And that has nothing to do with Pringles, but the sentiment, obviously, is something we all hold dear. The next one is Space Invaders, low-budget crisps, these ones.
A fairy tale story getting into the Champions League. Yeah.
Do you remember when Everton came into the Champions League and got knocked out in the qualifiers? Or what if they didn't? What if they had got in on their low-budget Space Invaders? They came in anything the factory could get its hands on, flavour-wise. Most often it's described as pickled onion, but it probably was just powdered piss. The next one is Walker's Sensations. Walker's, they went out, travelled the world, And they brought back some of the most exciting flavours the world could offer them. Flavours like chilli.
Hang on, there's some kind of something in thyme, isn't there?
Isn't that roast chicken and thyme?
Roast chicken and thyme, yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Something like that.
They brought back chicken with thyme and chilli. Revolutionary. They're one of those crisps that once you open the bag, you know, you're going to see the bottom of that bag, whether you planned it or not.
Sorry, which of these so far are you not finishing?
Yeah, good point.
They're in the Champions League because you finished them.
Well, I mean, the next one, they aren't going to get finished because Ben can't eat them because they contain questionable chemicals. Roysters!
I think they still contain MSG, which is poor form, but, you know.
I mean, I don't know what MSG is, but Roysters, they come in a delicious T-bone steak flavour, which, for all we know, could not be further from steak if we designed it to be. It's probably powdered piss and a bit of mustard. But they're in there. Again, they're cheap and affordable. You will see them in the supermarket from time to time, and they are the type of crisps that you will just go through. They rightly deserve a place in the Crisp Champions League. The next one is Skips. Now, Skips, I can't see Skips going very far in this competition, because Skips, they look like they're meant to be soft, then they're quite hard. But then you have another one and they're soft again. Strange crisp, strange texture.
Skips are very much the Levski Sofia of the Champions League.
Yeah.
They've qualified, but they're not expected to get far.
Yeah, they're just in there to, you know, they're a difficult away game for someone, that's about it. Brannigans are basically like the Hungary side of the 1950s entering the modern Champions League, because Brannigans is so old-fashioned and out there that, you know, if you even see Brannigans in a shop, you need to buy that fucker straight away, because that is rare. You can sell that on eBay for 10 quid, a pack of Brannigans, you know, they're seriously rare. These are thick-cut, high-quality potato chips. And I think most often you'll find them in ham and mustard flavour. Now, if you've never had Brannigans before, you're in for a real treat, because they are extraordinary crisps. Ben probably has never had them before because, you know, it's Ben, isn't it? Moving on.
Cultural void.
I don't think I have to, be honest.
French fries, I don't know what they are. They're called French fries and they look like chips, but they're not. I don't know what they are, I don't know how they get them in that shape. I think they might be insects, but nevertheless, they have qualified for the Crisp Champions League because for some reason they are delicious. Again, they come in a variety of flavours, but ready salted, that's the only one you're going to want, really. So, the last entrant is Doritos, a Mexican side, who have a few flavours such as Cool Original, which is not a flavour, it's just a statement. And cheese flavour, and a couple of other interesting flavours as well that have come out recently, like roulette flavour, again, not a flavour, just a statement, and some other things in there as well, but they're in there anyway because people love Doritos. And,
controversially, not a potato snack as well.
Yeah. So
should we have mini cheddars?
But a corn
as well,
tortilla. No. I love mini cheddars, don't get me wrong, Ben, but
yeah,
that's a biscuit.
Yeah, that they are biscuits.
You wouldn't dip it in your tea.
It's a savoury biscuit. Like a cracker.
I'd have to go along with that, Ben, and you're getting a voucher for even suggesting it. Get downstairs. So, yeah, these are the crisps. And they
well,
will
let
be
me
entering...
stop you there, John.
Oh,
I've got two more competitors.
Oh, good, okay.
Which will make it a full 16 and make it a lot easier to work out some form of bracket system to get a winner.
Late entrance, late qualifiers.
You've somehow missed off McCoy's.
Oh, yeah? Yeah,
because they're terrible.
The king of ridged crisps.
No.
What do you mean, no?
No, they're awful.
They're awful? Why?
They're Vanarama level crisps. Awful crisps, McCoy's. But yeah, put them in there anyway. We'll see them get eliminated earlier on. That'll bring me great joy.
Ben, I think that you and I should make McCoy's the Gandalf of this tournament.
I think so. I also quite like a bit of McCoy's.
Yeah.
That's disgraceful.
Fuck you, Johnny! And the final competitor, which you probably find more at a pub than just in the shops, is Real Crisps from the Real Hand-Cut Crisp Company.
Ooh,
oh, yeah,
okay.
It's a good shout as well, yeah.
They have a selection of rather crazy flavours, such as jalapeno pepper, roast ox, oak smoked barbecue rib, and of course everyone's favourites, cheese and onion, salt and vinegar, salted. Don't forget the ham and mustard. Oof.
That's a good crisp, actually. To be fair, they're rightly qualified in there. So yeah, we're obviously going to have to come up with some sort of seeding system. There's a group stage, home and away games in their respective bags. And
this might have to be a spin-off podcast. If you
can't we just go straight to the knockouts?
Yeah, I'm actually confused as how this is going to work. But it's the Champions League, so
we've
just
got
think,
16. We don't need groups. Knockout stages.
Think about the glamour.
Let's go.
Okay, knockout stages. Can I suggest, if this is a success as well, I've got the Crisp Europa League, which is for the unbranded potato snacks across the continent. So, you know, the crisps you get from Lidl's, own brand supermarket crisps, that sort of thing. I've got the Crisp Super Cup, which is obviously the winner of the Crisp Champions League against the winner of the Crisp Europa League, and the Copa Crispitadores, which is the crisps from South and Central America.
So how have Doritos got into the Champions League? Surely they should be in the Crispitadores.
They're very similar to how Australia get into the Eurovision Song Contest, I think.
Oh, okay. Bribery. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. So...
Also, do you think you should we be calling them crisps, or should we say potato chips to help our international listeners?
No.
I mean, they can call them what they want, Ben.
They can get down the stairs. If that's how they talk, Ben, they can get down the stairs.
Do the winners of the Europa League then get a place in next season's Champions League, John?
I think it would be
Tesco's
a miracle if
brand,
there is.
Salt and vinegar somehow get to the Champions League.
If there is another season of the Crisp Champions League, it will be a miracle.
If
because
we even
this is
start it, it'll be a miracle.
This is equally as bad as the superhero World Cup that we did in terms of quality.
The movie character World Cup. You can't even remember what it was. That's
exactly
how bad that was.
Exactly. So if we get to the final, I think we've done well, really, in just keeping it going. We might have to try and wrap it up all in one episode.
This is Edge on Art. I know everything about art. I've been to the Louvre.
So we haven't shown you any artwork for a couple of weeks, Johnny, but something appeared in the papers a few weeks ago that I thought would wind you up royally. So an art expert such as yourself. this is a piece that was recently sold at Christie's in New York, and it was sold for $432,000, and it's called Portrait of Edmund Bellamy, created by an art collective called Obvious. So I'm just going to send you the link to this now so you can have a look at it yourself.
Fucking hell, this sounds dire already.
So tell me when you open the link.
Right. Would someone like to explain to me what the fuck that is?
So this is a portrait drawn by a...
No, it's not.
it's created by an AI, so it's computer generated basically, and it was sold for £432,000. What do you think about that?
Dollars.
Sorry, he's speechless.
Oh, he's seething, I'm sure.
Looks like fucking toilet roll. No.
We've broken him.
Nope. Not doing it.
Does that upset you, Johnny?
I don't even want to talk about it. I don't even want to talk about it because it's just hateful. I can't talk about it. It would be wrong for me to talk about this because it's not art. It's the worst thing I've ever seen in my life in terms of a drawing, and I don't want to give it the publicity. I don't even want to talk about it because if I start talking about it, I'll be upset all night and I won't sleep because I'll be thinking about how shit this painting is. And it's not even a painting anyway, and even worse than that, it's been made by a robot.
A robot that looked at 15,000 portraits.
No, it didn't.
Painted between
it didn't look at anything.
20th centuries.
It didn't look at anything. And I don't know what the A and the I stand for in AI, but no, it didn't look at anything. It doesn't know what it's doing. It's just like that robo race, isn't it? It's just a complete fucking waste of time. just a complete fucking waste of time. It's just ruining the world. So, you know what? I would pay that amount of money for it just to throw it in the bin. No, not throw it in the bin. To give it a Viking burial.
What do you think of it, Kingy?
I mean, it's impressive for what it is in terms of an exercise in artificial intelligence.
No, it isn't.
I mean, it is, John.
No, it's not.
I'm not...
Because a computer can take a picture.
It's not good art, all right? So let me just put that out there. It's not good art. It's fucking shit.
It's not art.
But what is art? We've reviewed
piles... We've had barrels in a lake. So, you know, if that's art...
And the little tins of shit as well. But, no, I mean, it's a massive... It's more about what it actually means for artificial intelligence than the actual quality of the painting. It's actually part of a wider collection. They've done portraits of the entire fictitious Bellamy family. So there are, in fact, I think 10 or 11 of these portraits.
Christ.
Which are of varying realism is probably the word.
Are they going to be in the same place at the same time? At some point in the future.
This one's just been sold for $432,000. So
I think they should be displayed together inside a bonfire.
I mean, this is the future, surely.
I hate this fucking segment. I hate it.
I thought you were an expert on art. Surely this intrigues you.
It drives me mad because I quite like nice art and stuff, but you lot just show me shit.
We do not show you shit.
Yeah, absolute shit.
Night, didn't we?
The one time you showed me Van Gogh, one time, and the rest of the time it's pictures of Cantona with his shirt off.
That was a good one.
This absolute stain on a canvas by some sort of robot who thinks it can paint. No doubt done by some bellend like Elon Musk. Like, yeah, look what I've done. I've made this thing and it's shit, but look at this. Give me some money. Get down the fucking stairs. Honestly.
Shocking. We've showed you other good art.
Yeah, how rude. We'll show you some good art next time, Johnny. It's a proper
delete this fucking podcast.
You've seen some Picasso? What more do you want?
Oh,
we did Picasso that time. There was old what's his chops with his apple.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What was that? The Fall of Man? No. Is that what it's called?
No.
Something to do with man.
I think this is just where you have to draw the line. Like, it's just not fair to put someone through this amount of rage.
The son of man. It was the son of man.
So you say, Johnny, that there's no space for AI in art. Is that what you're saying?
No. Just like there's no space for AI in motor racing. And there's no space for AI anywhere other than, you know, making our lives easier. They don't belong anywhere near anything that requires human achievement or anything that requires feeling. So they can fuck off from music, they can fuck off from art, and they can fuck off from motor racing, and you can shove this entire segment both up your ass as you fall down the stairs.
So we'll return with Edge on Art next time with a more traditional piece of art.
No! Actually, yes, more traditional. Yes. Something nice, like a nice expressionist piece. Not this toilet roll in a frame made by some... No. No, it's not worth it.
That's one of the first times you'd ever been speechless, Johnny. It's just not worth it.
So, listeners, if you've got some form of art that you want John to review, then do please send them to Ben or I, and make sure they're shit, because John really enjoys those.
I've got a bit of tech news for you guys.
Dweeb detected. That's some tech for you, Ben, you fucking bellend.
I like that you did it in a robot voice, though, suggesting that you were okay with some tech, John.
If it's abusive to Ben, I'm okay with it.
Okay.
Good stuff.
So well, then I've got a lot of products to sell you, John.
Oh, sorry, Ben. We've hijacked the start of your segment.
Continue, right, Ben.
You carry on. So the first bit is a piece of F1 tech, which is obviously very exciting. It's not at all. Have you seen this idea that they're going to replace... I'm not sure if they're going to or considering replacing wing mirrors with screens, basically.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea because you can turn them off in the race. Don't tell the driver you're going to turn them off. Then just as someone's approaching him from behind, just turn them off. You'll get amazing, horrendous accidents. And now because there's a halo, no one's going to die. So you just have massive, massive accidents. No problem at all. It'd be great for the sport.
So is it like in Formula E, you can have that little boost? Or is in Formula One, you can just have a thing where you can turn off your competitors?
Oh, I was going to say, it just feels like Mario Kart.
Yeah, like having the black splodge over your face.
Yeah, yeah, just press some button and then suddenly all their mirrors go off.
It's like an EMP.
Brilliant.
EMP.
What are you doing? Yeah. I don't see why they're trying... Like, a mirror isn't particularly, like, heavy or anything. It's low-tech. It kind of does a job. Why would you stick cameras in which can get dirty and screens which can get broken and all of the electronics that are required to wire those things up? It just adds weight and potential for failure, whereas a piece of shiny metal is kind of simple.
And next time one of those mirrors breaks, it'll now be a 100-gram mirror instead of a 5-gram mirror. But that's Formula One, isn't it? It's a ridiculous sport, and it's been dead for 10 years. So,
I wonder if they're going to take the wing mirrors off their current location and just put it in front of the driver or something. Is that the plan? So they just have a full rear, like when you're playing on, you know, your PlayStation or your Xbox or whatever, and you can have a, you know, a screen to show what's going on behind you rather than having a little image either side of you. It just seems pointless to me.
I think I agree. I think it's pointless. I think it's just one of them gimmicks they're trying to think of to anything to make Formula One interesting.
Yeah. It's technology just, for technology's sake is what it is.
Yeah, you would just have to retire if they malfunctioned, whereas with a mirror, it can't really malfunction, can it?
Well, it can if it breaks.
Yeah, but you'd have, if something's got close enough to smash your mirror, then you've probably got bigger problems, haven't you?
Yeah, 7 years bad luck.
Yeah, exactly. Think about that, King. Christ, you think these things through, will you? So, I just thought that was a load of nonsense, but I've not seen anyone really comment about it positively. But then again, I haven't really been paying.
Can I talk about some toilets?
No.
Do you want to talk about toilets? This better be technology focused.
Well, apparently the toilets of the future are about to be launched. And
they've been launched in Japan for like 30 years, if that's what you're talking about.
Well, these are super toilets, basically. Basically, they want toilets to be somewhere that's comfortable, well lit, smell free, private, pleasant places to defecate. Places where we can go in peace.
That's what my toilet is.
I was going to say, yours isn't comfortable, King, and it's dangerous because the toilet seat's not attached.
Yeah, it's a death trap. But it keeps you alert.
Installed, but
it keeps you alert.
Well, you're not. Yeah, and you're not alone either in yours because your door didn't close, probably, does it? Or did you have it closed because you needed the light? Either way, you don't tick any of those boxes.
Yeah, King, yours is a toilet of the past, but these ones, they transform toilet stuff into useful products like water, fertilizer, electricity, and animal feed. And many of them don't require sewage systems at all. And they process the waste actually on the site. So it makes our sanitation systems last longer. So, you know, if things like floods happen, it's not as much of a problem because you don't get shit everywhere. You just get a flood water, which will probably have some other different type of shit in it, or not as much shit as it normally would have in it, but still kind of pretty shitty anyway. So yeah, these new toilets are going to have like special pipes sometimes that will go directly to special plants for things to happen, or like special blocks outside of houses and, you know, places to collect the shit and the piss to be taken off and be made into diamonds and other exciting things like Sony PlayStations and Richard Mille watches.
So that's a load of nonsense.
That's my toilet news for you there, Ben. Soon I'll be able to shit you a nice new watch.
Thank you for that. So keep your tech news to yourself next time.
Harsh.
Do you remember we talked about driverless cars a while back? And I think it was MIT that were doing a study on... it was almost like a quiz, wasn't it? If you're in a car... it's a driverless car. Should it kill the five people in the car or kill five people on a crossing, you know, if it needed to take action?
It should kill King.
I mean, that's always an option. But if he wasn't on the road...
It should kill Ben.
I'll be a passenger in the car, so that's fair enough. So it was asking whether it should swerve, you know, to hit, you know, successful business people, known criminals, elderly people, animals.
That covers smooth traffic.
So apparently the top trends globally from all the people that took this, I think, did they say it was like 40 million sets of answers or something they had? It's ridiculous. So the conclusion was that people think we should save humans over pets, which probably makes sense.
No.
What?
Save as many lives as possible. So
nope.
If there's an opportunity to save five criminals over three non-criminals, they would do that. and save young people over elderly people.
Wasn't the difficulty that we found with that that criminals don't actually walk around in stripy shirts carrying bags marked swag, so you can't really tell who's a criminal and who isn't?
Oh, well, it'll be microchipped king in the future, it'll be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, they'll be like dogs in the future.
Yeah. But interestingly, they split it up to see who or which countries preferred to save pedestrians and things like that. And they said that the three countries that had the most emphasis on sparing pedestrians were Japan, Norway and Singapore. And the ones that had the least emphasis on sparing pedestrians were China, Estonia and Taiwan, which is interesting.
What did it say about cyclists?
Controversially, I don't think that was put in, Johnny.
Missed the trick there.
Apparently, the French are the most keen on sparing the young. We came fourth there. So first was France, then Greece, then Canada and then us in the United Kingdom, in case anyone wasn't sure where we're from. And then the least emphasis on sparing the young was...
Are we not Dutch?
Taiwan again, China, South Korea, and then Japan. So the Chinese don't...
But the Asians have a very strong respect culture, don't they?
For their elderly.
For the elderly. Yeah. So certainly in Japan and Korea, that makes a lot more sense. I mean, China, well, it just ties in with the general emphasis on not sparing pedestrians.
Yeah, interesting one. But yeah, so I think basically, in conclusion... If we get autonomous vehicles...
Someone's going to die.
Screwed. Yeah. Yeah, basically. So there you go. So I just thought we'd follow up on that as they bothered to tweet us some stuff a while back.
Is there a chance that autonomous vehicles could kill all of us by getting a bit confused?
Well, only if they listen to the podcast.
Yeah. So, Johnny, you mentioned something that almost resembles news. The Audi R8. You wanted a Twitter on about that?
Yeah, well, there was some speculation about the R8 going hybrid and stuff, but it's not going to. Apparently it's going to be a V10 forever, or until the R8 dies out and becomes, you know, one of the last great supercars. So yeah, you don't have to worry about a V6 twin-turbo R8 coming into the world. It's going to be V10 always, and that's great because that is brilliant. That's one of the best engines ever, and it's spectacular, so I'm really, really glad about that. And so if you've got an R8 and you're going past cyclists, scare the shit out of them.
I feel like you've got some kind of beef with cyclists here.
I've got some beef with cyclists.
Yeah. More specific than just your usual dislike for them. Do you need to share something?
The other day when I was out in the X-Class, I was driving down a single track lane, right? And it's fairly open in Yorkshire and see like quite a way ahead, and there was a cyclist on the single track lane. And the bit we were coming up to, there was a passing place on my side of the road. So I thought, great, I'll get to that and I can drive into the passing place to let the cyclist through. No, the cyclist decided instead to not let me pull into the parking place and just cycle straight at me and force me to stop completely and him to sort of just shave the X-Class, basically, and made me... I mean, he could have killed himself if I hadn't stopped the car, basically. But in the cyclist's head, he thought I should have driven up onto the verge and got out of his way. Now, I don't know about you, but if I am a small bag of meat, which I am compared to a 2-ton pickup truck, I tend to do what I can to not get hit by it, because there is some pretty unfortunate consequences to being hit by cars, as we know. And this guy proceeded to have a go at me for not driving up onto a verge, which to do so I would have had to stop fully anyway and engage the special four-wheel drive mode and approach it at a different angle to get up it, because it's probably a 2-foot ditchy moundy thing at the side of the road. But no, he just cycled straight at the pickup truck instead, when he could have just let me pull into the passing place on, which was on my side of the road. Incredible bellendery, and I had a good old argument with him. Complete dickhead. And then the other day I was...
Did he film you on his camera?
No, he didn't have a camera or a YouTube, luckily.
I was going to say, it makes me wonder whether or not dash cams are starting to... I'm not necessarily a fan of them, but maybe it's starting to be sensible to have one, just in case you get somebody...
I wish I did.
Because if, you know, if the cyclist hit the front of your, you know, your pickup, whether you were, you know, in the wrong or not, you're going to look like you're in the wrong, aren't you?
I'm going to get the blame.
If there's a car and a cyclist colliding. So, you know, if a cyclist is driving like an idiot, then that needs to be noted, I think. So it's almost to protect yourself sometimes.
The thing that really pissed me off about that is he had a go at me for being inconsiderate and all of this stuff. Now, mate of mine, Damien Cross, obviously he's the organiser of Lap of Anglia and stuff, big cyclist, great bloke. he had an accident on his bike not long ago, and he was not in a good way for a bit. You know, I bear that in mind, because as much as I find cyclists to be intensely annoying a lot of the time when driving, because they cycle in inappropriate places and a lack of high-vis clothing, and they tend to think they are always in the right, I try to, you know, be considerate for them. And the other thing is that you cannot drive a 2-ton giant Mercedes pickup truck without being considerate, because if you're not, you will end up driving through people's cottages by mistake, because it's just so big and so unwieldy and heavy. You have to be considerate when you drive it. I don't know what would possess someone to cycle straight at a pickup truck that was moving. I just don't know. I don't know what, you know, what frame of mind do you have to be in to just assume that everything's going to be all right there. Ridiculous. And when all he had to do was not even stop cycling, just slow down a bit, and I could have gone into the passing point and he could have just gone on his merry way. But no, some people just want to have a massive argument and try and get you in trouble, don't they? But obviously motorists are completely demonised, and it all would have been my fault, and it would have been me who ended up getting fined or getting put in prison if anything had happened to him, because that's the way it works for some reason, unless you've got a dash cam to prove, you know, what a dickhead that person was being. And the other one, the other day, I was in town and I was going to my doctor's surgery, and to pull into the park, the parking place, is you know, single file to get into, because it's an old site, basically. And a guy came out of the parking place to say there was no room. So I'd stopped in the road, and right on my bumper was a cyclist, an old man, no helmet on, you know, just, and he was right on my bumper. So I put my car into reverse to tell him I had to go backwards because I couldn't go any further. And he immediately started shouting at me in the street, you're going to hit me, you're trying to kill me, use your fucking mirrors, all of this stuff. And I couldn't believe it. But you know what? Because he is the old man, he is completely 100% right about that. And I'm a terrible driver because I've got an Abarth 695, and that automatically makes me a lout and a thug and some sort of hoodie. And yeah, so he was 100% right. I am terribly, terribly sorry for trying to communicate that I had to go backwards. And I feel so bad that I nearly killed him by doing no miles an hour whatsoever.
I think even if you were doing quite a few miles an hour in the little Abarth, you probably wouldn't have caused much damage.
No, if anything, the bicycle would probably have left a massive dent in your car.
It could be an interesting fight, actually, bike versus Abarth. You know.
It's a valid point, though, John, in that how else are you meant to tell him that you need to reverse?
Exactly.
Like, what, you know, are you meant to get out and say, I need to reverse my car, can you move your bicycle, please?
The thing is, he proceeded to shout at me, even though, at this point, I'd wind the window down. What are you doing? And he was insisting that I'd hit him and not use my mirrors and stuff. This is a bloke in his 70s not wearing a helmet. If I had hit him, he'd be dead, no matter what speed I'm doing. Because when you're 70 and you fall off a bike, you ain't got a chance of you. Basically, you're made of glass at that age. So, yeah, and he proceeded to argue with me in the middle of the road. And I had to say to him, do you want to get out of the road so we can get this giant traffic jam that's formed sorted out? And he just picked up his bike and walked off. Didn't even cycle off. What's the point? What is the point? So I have an issue with cyclists, and not all cyclists, because a lot of them, you know, find it very difficult. But a lot of them don't use their brain at all. And I don't think I should have to apologise for saying that, because it's blindingly obvious, because I drive past cyclists in the dark on A roads coming home from York, and they're not even wearing high-vis clothing.
I see them a lot cycling around Reading, you know, in the evenings, and it's like, it's, but you know, you don't see them until you're so close, because they're wearing no high-vis, they've got no lights on, and they're just weaving in and out of the cars. It's like, it's ridiculous. You think people have got a death wish. And there are plenty of people that go full lights, reflective gear, cycle perfectly sensibly. You know, there's plenty of those, but there's also plenty of utter morons. And I don't think they realise how blind that you are to them. You know, they just hide into hide in the shadows. It's terrifying, really.
I hold them in the same bracket as people who drive without thinking as well, who overtake on blind corners. Not using your brain when you're driving. You have to remember that when you're driving, you're in control of a piece of metal that is capable of an enormous amount of damage because of the speeds it can go. And, you know, there are consequences to that. If something goes wrong, there are consequences. You can seriously hurt people, you can kill people. People get killed every day on the road. So why people take risks, or why people... This, and the other thing is, they take risks to make a point as well.
Mm.
So I think that guy who cycled straight at me when I was in a pickup truck probably didn't like the fact I was driving a black pickup truck, which is also Mercedes-Benz for a start, and probably has something against motorists, because a lot of them seem to think it's, you know, a lot of them try and take militant action, it seems. But no, it's upsetting. I don't have to get out of the car and shout at people. But, you know, you have to defend yourself at the same time. You can't just have people taking the piss like that. And they have to know, you know, if he does that again, he might be killed. He might be.
I do agree, John, and I think that as Ben says, the vast majority of cyclists are perfectly acceptable road users and have got their head screwed on. But the thing is that it's very much like footballers. It's very much like football fans, in that the small minority are what everyone perceives the majority to be. So obviously, you know, football fans are they're all a bunch of hooligans and louts, which is utter bollocks. And similarly, yeah, cyclists, or they're all a bunch of car-hating, militant
YouTubers,
save the world types. Yeah, and they're not. You know, I know plenty of people who are cyclists, and they also drive because they need to get places that are further away than 2 miles. So yeah, it irritates me, and it always reminds me of, I don't know if I've mentioned this on here before, but it always reminds me of watching a scenario unfold in Bath one evening when I was walking through town. There's a set of traffic lights which is on a T-junction, and it's a one-way system across the T-junction, but coming up from the T you can go left or right basically. So the lights are changed to red for the cars approaching the T, and then just going along the top the lights have gone green. Chap starts driving, cyclist just comes straight across. Chap has to slam on his brakes because he's just run through a red light. The chap then honks his horn, and the cyclist stops in the middle of the road, so they can't go anywhere because it's a one-way system and it's narrow, so he can't go anywhere. The cyclist then gives the chap a volley of abuse and asks him if he's going to step out of the car so that they can have a frank discussion about this situation. And obviously the driver quite sensibly says, I'm not getting out of the car, but you've just run a red light. I could have hit you. But obviously this did not wash with the cyclist. And
no.
He continued to insist that the chap get out of his car so that they can deal with it like men. That wasn't even one of the Lycra Brigade, as you may term the militant cyclists. That was just a chap, probably late 40s, early 50s, who, for whatever reason, just believed that he owned the road because he has a bicycle and he's saving the planet. And, yeah, it was one of the most awkward things to watch because, you know, it's just people being put in a ridiculous situation and making themselves look so stupid at the same time. And that's the thing. And if anything, I felt more embarrassed for the cyclist because he's just making a complete tit of himself because he's clearly in the wrong and yet he's making a massive issue out of this. But again, the small minority are what ruin it for everyone else, so...
And it's the same with drivers as well, to be fair.
Oh, no, absolutely.
People who you know, drive like complete dickheads, and I'm just as damning of them as I am anyone else. But the problem with a lot of cyclists is they think they have a different set of rules to follow, and they also think they don't have to be considerate to people in cars because cars are larger, and it's our responsibility to, almost like it is, you know, when with drivers and pedestrians, if someone's in the road, you have to stop. They seem to think of themselves as kind of glorified pedestrians sometimes, and we have to, you know, do everything for them and, you know, help them out all the time. And most of the time we do because we have to. But there's plenty of them who just go around basically thinking, you know, they can do whatever they like on the road because they've got a bike, and they don't consider what it's like to be a driver. And those two instances have just...
So many of them don't follow the rules of the road, and that's what pisses me off.
And they don't even know the rules of the road either.
No, exactly. And I've noticed recently, probably at least in the last sort of 12 months or so, I see more and more drivers running red lights.
Yep.
Like, you know, the lights change to red, and you get, you know, if you're at a junction, the lights change to red, you'll see two cars drive through.
Yeah, you see that all the time at the moment.
It's been, you know, they've had plenty of time. And I find that is becoming more and more prevalent. But yep. at the same rate, I couldn't tell you the last time I saw a cyclist stop for traffic lights. You know, if the lights are red or whatever, it's just like, well, that's fine because I'm a cyclist. I can just skip on through here. You know, it only takes someone to, well, not be looking out for someone jumping a red light.
Yeah.
Because if you see a car sat at the traffic lights, you're then going to think, well, it's safe that way. I don't need to keep looking that way. If a cyclist then comes out and you hit them, and as you say, John, you'll be the one in the wrong because you're in the car.
Yeah.
even though they've jumped the lights. So
it's because if you've got a car, you're demonised. It's automatically your fault. And especially, how does it look for me as well? You know, a young guy with an Abarth, with an exhaust like that. Then you know, no one's ever going to consider me might be the innocent party in something like that.
No, absolutely. They
just won't side with me.
You are essentially a cliche.
Yeah.
You're labelled as a cliche, aren't you?
So, if it comes down to the word of a 50-year-old eco-warrior and a 31-year-old Italian car enthusiast who's, you know, looks like a dickhead as it is, there's only one outcome, isn't there?
Yeah.
And a lot of these people don't give a toss. So yeah, it really upset me. Properly upset me. You know what? I could have easily have put both of them in the bin. I wanted to pick them both up and put them in a bin because there wasn't any stairs around in the middle of the road.
You can't push people that age downstairs, John. That's just not allowed.
That's the thing about the penalisation system I've come up with. It's a lottery. It might be all right. You might not. But you don't want to risk getting a voucher, do you?
So to try and cheer you up a bit, Johnny, and bring us back on track.
Have you got me a book of vouchers?
I haven't. I do have a foldable, bendable phone, though.
A what?
Did you see the Samsung announcement? It's kind of like a disguised phone, so you call it a prototype, if you will. Like when they test cars and put the camera on it, it's kind of like that. But they're going to release it properly next year, but it's a foldable phone, so it has basically two screens. And it folds into a small phone or opens into a tablet.
So it's a flip phone?
It is nearly a flip phone, yes. But many, many years of development. What do you think of it? Exciting? Pointless?
I'm looking at the GIF and it looks like a flip phone.
It's a gimmick, isn't it? At the end of the day.
Is it a gimmick? Probably. Yes.
It's going to be like, I don't know, what other things have been gimmicks? 3D. It's going to be like 3D.
See, I don't think so, because I think there's no benefit to having 3D, really.
Exactly. There's no benefit to having this.
But people love tablets and people love phones, so why not combine the two?
You make a valid point, but...
You know, you've got your sort of normal sort of 5-inch screen or whatever on the front, which is, you know, what we all deal with, and then loads of people have tablets that are like sort of 7 or 8 inches, and that's what the size of it will be when it's unfolded.
But I would say, so why not just have a foldable tablet? Because if you've got that, why would you use it unfolded? You'd fold it to put it in your pocket, but then when you get on the train, you're not then going to look at the small screen when you know you've got the bigger screen.
Well, that's what this is. You know, an unfoldable phone or a foldable tablet, whichever way you look at it. You know, it's a tablet that folds into a phone.
Are you going to get one, Ben?
No, because it'll be outrageous.
There we go.
It'll be like probably 12 to 1500 quid, I reckon.
I've noticed in that article as well you sent us, it's also a rollable TV.
Yes.
From LG. So a TV you can roll up.
Yeah.
What? Do you have to carry it around in one of them tubes like a jigsaw puzzle when you're doing
so
a jigsaw puzzle?
Aren't they like, you know, when you're at school and you'd get the overhead projector out and you'd have to pull down the projector screen? Isn't it the same principle as that? Like pulling down the projector screen.
Except you don't need the projector anymore.
Yeah. Except I mean, you don't need the projector, yeah.
I see no point in having a rollable screen, really. That's nonsense.
Yeah, who needs to save that space?
Yeah, I can see a point of a folding phone. You know, tablet to phone, sort of.
I can see the phone. I can see the phone. I can see the point of a foldable tablet.
Yeah.
But I can't see why you would then make it a phone as well.
Also, it's sort of at a glance usable.
Yeah, but this is my point. If you pick it up, if you know that you can open it out and it becomes a tablet,
yeah,
you'd do that.
No, if not, if somebody just sent you a single text message or you were going to make a phone call, you'd just want to read it on the little screen, wouldn't you?
But haven't you got a smartwatch for that?
No. Who uses smartwatches? They're pointless.
What happened to Google's glasses that had screens inside them as well?
Oh, people used to get lynched for them.
Yeah, they're still around.
Lynched?
Yeah, yeah. Genuinely, because obviously people felt that it was an invasion of privacy because it would obviously record what you were doing. So yeah, there are stories of people like getting chased out of bars and stuff in America because they had the Google glasses on.
Because people didn't understand it and just assumed they were constantly being filmed.
Yeah.
You know, they've shown since then that that people aren't too fussed because Snap bought out spectacles, didn't they, that can record. So people haven't been too upset by that. But they are bringing out Google Glass again, but it's being like drip-fed into society through like warehouses and stuff where it's actually quite functional. So you'll see them again. They're just taking a slower approach.
They were just ahead of the game, really, weren't they?
Yeah. Much like loads of technology's been like that over time, you know. Microsoft brought out a tablet long before Apple did, but it was a bit too soon. People couldn't work out what it was good for.
How much do you think it'll weigh?
It'll be bigger than a normal phone. It'll be chunkier. It'll be heavier. For now, in a few years' time, it'll be back.
Probably this is my strenuous link to another piece of tech news.
Do you mean tenuous link?
It's been strenuous as well, to be honest. The kilogram. It's not a kilogram anymore.
I was reading about that at length the other day. That's very sad.
How does it work, Ben? Because I've read this 100 times and I still don't know what they're talking about. Apparently there is 1 kilogram somewhere that is a kilogram, and every other kilogram has to be like that kilogram, but now that kilogram isn't a kilogram anymore.
So which bit are you struggling with?
All of it.
So it's just...
This feels more like Johnny's Learning Annex, but...
It is. let's quickly cut here. Right,
I'll
Johnny's
pipe in the
annex.
Jingle. Did we have a jingle? No.
No, we don't have a jingle, so we'll just carry on as we are. So there is a reference kilogram, right? So, you know, there wasn't anything that was a kilogram before, so they developed a weight.
What about a couple of bags of sugar?
Exactly. So they got a couple of bags of sugar, and they said, right, let's make something that is the weight of a couple of bags of sugar. And that has to be the reference, because you need a point to measure against, don't you, if you're going to be, you know, how do you know how much a bag of sugar weighs? You know, you have to have something that's originally a kilogram that you can test against. So what in Paris, there is a weight that is the reference kilogram. And when people want to create their own weights, they come to Paris and they make as close a replica to that as they possibly can. And that's how they measure things. So loads of people duplicate that kilogram weight and then use it themselves to act as a weight themselves.
So why is it not a kilogram anymore? And why is it in a sucky jar?
So it's in a sucky jar. So it's kept in 3 sort of vacuum sealed sort of bell jars to keep air off it and everything else. So it needs to be prevented from any sort of external factors that might change the weight. Because if you think if the temperature changes too much and expands, it might, you know, it might damage it. Or if people handle it too much, they'll wear away the material, you know, all that sort of stuff. So they keep it locked away. And it's got a special way that you're able to handle it to make sure that they don't, you know, scratch it or chip bits off.
Does it involve magic?
There is a small amount of magic. So basically, they've decided that that isn't precise enough. So they have developed a new method of creating or measuring a kilogram, which I think uses electromagnets or something like that. But they've done the same thing with loads of stuff, like the second has been sort of changed from a... I can't think what the original method of measuring a second was, but they've now made that pretty precise.
I think you say 1 hippopotamus.
Oh, okay, yeah. So that was the old method.
Wasn't it like 15,000 vibrations of a electron or something? I think it's something like that. I think it's particle vibration.
At the moment, there's this article that I was reading earlier on. It was actually on this same website. So the new fundamental concepts for a second, for various things. So a meter is the distance travelled by light in a vacuum in 792,458 seconds. A second is exactly 9,192,631,770 cycles of radiation of an atom of cesium-133.
Of course.
I'm not even going to tell you what a kilogram is, because it's Planck's constant and there's a big old number that I wouldn't have a clue what that is. Yeah, so basically everything now is a proper scientific rule that measures it rather than just something a bit... Because I think the original meter was something daft, like they measured the distance from like the North Pole to the equator and then divided it up. It was something really crazy like that that someone did manually. It should generally make science better, because people will be able to measure things slightly more precisely.
The thing that I like the most about all of this, and I think you'll like this, John, it's the fact that there is someone at the National Institute of Standards and Technology who is called the Keeper of the Kilogram.
It's true.
Oh, that is cool.
It is.
I want that title.
That is a gentleman by the name of Patrick Abbott. And yeah, he is literally the Keeper of the Kilogram.
Can I be the Keeper of something?
No.
You can be the Keeper of the Keys, John.
No, I'd lose them.
Well, it's all right, because they're your keys, so it doesn't matter to me. Lose them if you want.
Well, now that I have a migraine, given to me by Ben, showing me art, Ben explaining me
technology. So you admit
technology.
It was art, then?
Ooh, he's got you there.
We're going to delete this podcast. But before we do, please tweet us at Smooth Traffic. Leave us some reviews on your podcast providers to tell us that you have liked or have been offended by this podcast. I know which one I've been. And just support us in any way you can. Give us... How much did I ask for last time? What happened to my... You know, in the intro I forgot to do last time, I had my new scheme, my 12 pence scheme. From do you remember the 12 pence scheme?
Nope.
No, it's not really a pyramid scheme. It's based.
I'd love to run a pyramid scheme one day.
Maybe we should start one, actually.
Well, we can't do it now that we've talked about it, but
yeah, do it in Egypt.
That's one of my dreams. Do you remember Land of the Ancients?
Oh yes, I do. Have we not done that yet?
Go back to episode 33 for that one. Notice that when I was checking out the World Cup characters earlier. I literally just explained it. If you hadn't been talking over me, Ben, you'd know now.
Yeah, Ben, use your ears. Yeah, Land of the Ancients. Okay, that's something next time we've got to sort out, because I can't believe we haven't done that yet. So there's your reason to visit the next episode of Smooth Traffic, Land of the Ancients. You know what it is, because, you know, you're fully up to date with your smooth traffic history. Bye, then.